This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. And my car actually started. Yay. I and my car have been having a little adventure together. If you regularly listen to the podcast, you might remember back in December-ish, January-ish, my car was just not starting occasionally. And I thought it was due to the cold, and everything has been fine. And then on Saturday, needed to run a little errand for the kids, and so I hopped in my car, drove down to their house, which is pretty close, but then I was driving into town, and I'm a little off center here. I'm gonna just square this up. There we go. Got what they needed, jogged back to my car, hopped in, nothing, no key turn, nothing, no ticks, no nothing, dead silence. Rats. So then I went ahead and took Nett's van in. I took Nett's van in. Got the running around done that I needed to do. And just gave it a couple hours and went back down to their house. Boom! Started right up. So that's the last time it's done it. But of course, every time I come out to my car now, I never know whether it's actually going to start or not. So every time I walk up to my car, I tell my car, "All right, car, it's your chance to be a hero. Let's see if you're going to start." And so far, so good. It started up. Yay! Good car. Good car. In other news, everything is puttering along at work. It's all good. That little expert system thing that I was just praying, oh Jesus, I hope this works, seems to be working. So yay, now if I can just explain it to people and they can understand what I'm doing. I did, one of my fellow programmers, I explained it to them over the last week and they were nodding their heads, and then I was explaining it to my direct superior. He wasn't sure what I was doing at first, but then I showed him some examples, and then he nodded his head. He said, "Oh, okay, I see what you're doing." Yay! So, got the programmers, got it. They're doing okay now. The big thing will be if I can just get the people over in financial services to understand it. That's going to be the big thing. But step at a time. I think it is the way they think. Internally, I think we're gonna find out. So, anyways, it's fun. But it was kind of nice this afternoon to be going through it, seeing it work. I should probably mention that I'm going to be additionally tired and hopefully not scatterbrained during this podcast. I am on day two of what will either be a two-day fast or a three-day fast. It will all depend on how well I can write tonight. It is Thursday today, and my major client is closed tomorrow because it is July 3rd tomorrow. And that means that it's 4th of July. Yay! So we're doing month-end close tonight. So tonight at about 9:45 or so, if I hop on and everything's green, yay! No chance of any phone calls tomorrow, I don't think. Good, long, solid 3-day weekend. Lots of writing to do. What was I saying? Yes. I'm sorry. I'm a little low on energy. So it's Thursday afternoon. I haven't eaten anything since Tuesday night. So I'm going on 48 hours now, which is supposedly what you need to convince your body to go ahead and start doing garbage collection on a lot of stuff. And it supposedly resets your immune system. I did a 3-day fast. I probably mentioned it on the podcast. I did a 3-day fast back in January. I think I did it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of the first week of January. And I looked at the calendar, and it was July 1st, and I thought, well, I should try that again. So, unfortunately, last night when I was trying to write, I was a little foggy, which is kind of normal for Wednesday night. But then I thought, well, maybe if I get through day two, I'll kind of perk up a little bit. So that's what we're hoping. I'm hoping we're going to perk up a little bit tonight. I need to put down somewhere in the region of 500, 750 words. I'm only slated for 250, but my goal is to like double that. So, you know, 500 words, which usually isn't too bad. If I'm going, if I'm in a section that's going, and I'm pretty well in a section that's going, so I'm thinking I could do that. And then tomorrow, theoretically, if I'm doing a 3-day fast, I'm actually fasting tomorrow again. We'll see. I'll let you know how it goes. Wouldn't surprise me if the flesh pushes me to actually eat tomorrow, because I'm guessing by about noon or so, as I'm trying to write, the flesh is going to be telling me, oh, you gotta get some food, man. You gotta get some food. You have to get some food. So we'll see how this goes. My goal is 7,500 words this week. My normal goal is 5,000, but I've been doing 7,500 a week, and so I just thought, let's just keep trying to do this. So anyways, that's good. Everything's good. The writing's coming along. Wrote some fun scenes this last week. It's good. Everything is good. Good. The book isn't all kind of mashed together yet, but I can feel it. It's coming. I just got to finish it up. Anyways, so. A couple of weeks ago, I listened to a TED Talk, pieces of a TED Talk, Sam Harris on free will. And about the first time, the first statement, I was just like, what? And especially with his first statement, which I'll read in a second, I was just like, oh yeah, here we go. Here we go. Because there is just such arrogance in the statements. But, you know, the more I thought about it and the more I listened to some other things, I thought, you know, okay, I can see what he's going for. I can see what he's seeing in the world and trying to address. Can see that. I just think he's gone about it in a way that is not unusual, because the determinists do the same thing, but it's really fascinating to watch people who have any understanding of the present state of understanding in physics. Really interesting to see them then attempt at the same time to postulate things that are deterministic. When you factor in quantum mechanics and the behavior of quantum particles, and when you factor in chaos, it's just really fascinating to see people pontificating in what would be a mode that is similar to classical physics. But we'll get to that in a minute. And like I said, maybe this wasn't... Well, I didn't say this. I thought I was going to say it, but I didn't actually say it. This probably isn't the best time for me to be doing this particular podcast, because I'm a little foggy, but we'll muddle through. it'll be fine. And that way, if I say something that in 5 years I think, well, that was a dumb thing to say, I can just say, you know what? I hadn't eaten for 2 days. So here we go. Sam Smith, Free Will. Now, I should say that I have not watched Sam Smith's hour and 23 treatise on free will. In fact, what I did was I watched some montages that people had put together of his stuff. So I don't think I'm quoting him out of context, because all the quotes were internally consistent and consistent over the whole montage. So I'm assuming that people just cut up the really good parts and just listed them. So the montage that I listened to started off with Sam Smith making the statement, "The illusoriness of free will is as certain a fact as the truth of evolution." He did qualify that by saying, "in my mind." Well, I can understand how it might seem that way in your mind, given that you believe you know all and see all. So then he says that this idea that free will is simply illusory, that it really doesn't exist, that everything is predetermined, he says, understanding this has the potential to change our sense of moral good and our notion of a free society. And I had a little thought in my mind when he said that, but let's just mosey on through and we'll get back to that. He says, so much of life seems to depend on our viewing one another as conscious agents capable of free choice. Well, yes, it does. He said, so I think if the scientific community will ever declare free will as an illusion, as I think we eventually must, I would think it would precipitate a cultural war far more acrimonious than the ones that have been held on the subject of evolution. He goes on to say that free will is an illusion. It's a totally incoherent idea. Doesn't make any sense. And he says, which is to say, in his opinion, it is impossible to describe a universe in which it could be true. See, this is what gets into that determinism stuff I was talking about. It's impossible to describe a universe in which it could be true. And he said, not only is it untrue, it's hard to even make sense of what have been claimed to be true. Okay, now the first thing, when you're listening to someone and they're talking like this, the first thing you have to define in your own mind is, what do they mean by the blanket term? And the blanket term in this case is free will. Okay, what do we mean by that? And his definition is, as he said, that the popular conception of free will seems to rest on two big assumptions. First, that each of us was free to behave differently than we did in the past. If we were offered chocolate ice cream and we chose that in the past, we could just have easily chosen vanilla. And in fact, if you somehow were presented that choice exactly the same as you were, you might have chosen vanilla sometimes and you might have chosen chocolate sometimes. And that the second premise is that we are the conscious source of our thoughts and actions. That your experience of wanting to do something is the source. So I want to make this decision, therefore I make the decision. Or in the past, when I chose something, I could have chosen something different. All right, now, that second one, that we are the conscious source of our decisions. See, I don't believe that, even though I believe in free will, and we'll get back to why I don't believe we are the conscious source of all our decisions. I think we make the decisions, but what pushes the decisions is not necessarily a conscious thing. So then he goes on to say, we know that both of these assumptions are not true. Okay, cause and effect. Either our wills are determined by a long chain of prior causes, and we will not be responsible for them, or they are the product of chance, and we are not responsible, or it's some combination. He said, but no combination gives us what people want. Wants are the product of prior causes which cannot inspect, which we cannot inspect, and therefore we could not choose even if we wanted to. Says, no one picks the life-shaping influencers. You don't pick your height. You don't pick your parents. You don't pick whether your body is going to make red blood cells. Okay, well, let me just insert here that making red blood cells is not the equivalent to a massively parallel processor that is the brain. While it is true all our experiences are stored back in there, it is also true we're getting a multitude of input at any given time that we are all past parallel processing, and we're arriving at conclusions based on settings and experiences that are irreproducible. You know, to say it's like red blood cells is an oversimplification. And in fact, a buddy of mine who I was talking to this week had said that Stephen Hawking has come out, I guess, I don't know, recently, because I've got some quotes from him, which he seems to have changed his mind about some things, had come out. My friend remembered him saying, and Stephen Hawking said, well, it's more like the weather. You know, yeah, every single piece of the weather has a cause, but the system is so complex that you're never going to be able to predict it. To which I respond, well, if you can never predict it, it doesn't really matter if it all has causes. Because what you've just described is a system that is so complex that is, even if it isn't free will, truly in the classical sense of the term, it simulates free will so well that anything you would hope to be gained by saying, well, it's not free will, is pointless. We'll get back to that in a minute, too. So anyways, so he goes on, he says, once we recognize that even the most terrifying people are in some basic sense unlucky to be who they are, the logic of hating them as opposed to merely fearing them goes away. Okay, well, there's another approach to that as well, which we'll get to it. And he talks about how that this reduces hatred and it increases empathy and compassion. Yeah, there's another approach to all this that does all those things exactly as well. He says, you are not making decisions. You are merely a witness. Okay, and by this point, I was thinking, okay, I kind of get what he's trying to get to. I just think it's an odd way to go about it. And as I said before, it's more kind of in the mode and the way of thinking that people were in when they were doing classical physics. And now that we have an understanding, or at least we guess we have an understanding, of quantum mechanics, this idea of more random, more probabilistic features of our existence, it really seems to kind of fly in the face of this. If in fact there is chaos, and if in fact we live in a probabilistic rather than a deterministic universe, you know, it seems like free will, especially in the massively parallel processor that is our brain, seems like free will might be much closer to probability than simply saying everything is completely deterministic. But we'll get back to that in a minute, too. So then he goes on, falderall, lots of stuff. How can we be free with conscious agents if everything we consciously intend was caused by events in our brain which we do not intend, over which we have no control, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't mean that choice... Oh, this is where it got interesting to me. So there are places, if everything's deterministic, there are places that take you philosophically which are not great places. And so because of that, then he has to start backing up. It does not mean that choice doesn't matter. Sitting back is also a choice, and that... Getting my mail. Also has its consequences. So he's saying that choice does matter, and the choices we make in life matter. And those choices are as important as people think. But the next choice, he says, that you make will come out of a wilderness of prior causes that you can't see and you did not bring into being. You can't pick the interactions or the effects they had upon you of every event and conversation, the exposure of all the ideas that you've had. And then he says, where is the freedom in this? You are free to do what you want even now, but where do your wants come from? So he acknowledges that somehow we're making these choices. But he's trying to make the case that we're not really making choices. We're just acting out whatever is predetermined, whatever from the set of influences that we're getting. And that you really couldn't choose anything differently. But your choice has consequences. So, you know, okay. And he says, you can be blamed for your weaknesses. You can't be blamed for your weaknesses, but it matters that you correct them. But doesn't that mean you can correct them? And if you can correct them and you don't correct them, shouldn't you then be blamed for your weaknesses? Which, there's another way to go about this. So if you're not slaved to all the things that went before that would drive you in a certain direction, does that not imply that you have a freedom to move in a different direction? See, either it's deterministic or it's not. And if it's not, then it's a matter of figuring out, well, how much not is it? I don't see how you can have it in both ways. He says, what does make sense is improving your life and the lives of others. Love and compassion make sense. Well, that sounds good. I agree with that. Create an environment of success for yourself and for those around you. I agree with that. But again, don't you have to make a choice to improve your life? Because if you're going to improve your life anyways because of the prior things that happened to you, and it's all deterministic, then what good is it to tell someone who it's all deterministic, they're never going to improve their life? Well, you should improve your life. It doesn't make, you know, what's the point of telling them that? What's the point of talking if it's all deterministic? If minds can't be changed, if people can't be moved in a different direction, what's the point? Finally, he says, but the idea that we as conscious beings are deeply responsible for the character of our own minds is just impossible to map onto reality. Well, no, it's not really. It's not really. So here's the way I map free will. We basically have a war going on inside us. It's this massive war. All your wants, not all your wants, but the wants that are destructive, all of those wants are ginned up by your flesh, from your experiences, from what you've done to your body. They're all ginned up with a slathering of destruction on top of them. And those come bubbling up from beneath your conscious brain and are trying to push you constantly towards things that will cause your destruction. At the same time, we have this communication that's going on. Of course, Sam Harris doesn't believe in God, so that's fine. At the same time, we have this communication that's going on and the mystery that is the mind that potentially is reacting at a quantum level to things. And in that, we also have wants that are bubbling up that lead to life. And in any given situation, then, where free will comes into being, is not that I am the complete master of my ship. It's not that I control the waves. It's not that I control the wind. But I do have my hand on the rudder. I do have my hand on the sail. But I only have a very, very small opportunity. And in fact, I believe that free will lives in a tenth of a second, in 100 milliseconds. In another one of his speeches, Sam Harris was talking about how that, well, we can show using fMRIs that when people make a decision to flip a switch or to flip the switch on the left side or the right side, we can show that their unconscious mind has actually made that decision seconds or half a second before a given individual registers the conscious thought of which switch to flip. And from that, then, he draws the conclusion that we don't have free will. But see, drawing that conclusion at that point presupposes that there is only one source of decision-making. And that's not my viewpoint at all. There are multiple sources of decision-making within us. This explains the chaos within us. There is one source of wants that is trying to push us in one direction, get us to make one decision. There are other sources and wants that are trying to push us in other directions. And those all bubble up from our unconscious and subconscious, and then we make that choice in the tenth of a second. So it would make perfect sense when you put somebody on fMRI, you would actually see those mechanisms at work. And for people who are used to just doing whatever their flesh tells them to do, it would be very easy to see the flesh saying, switch, 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 left, switch, left, left, switch, left, switch, left, switch. And you'd see that coming up on the fMRI, and then it finally bubbles up and goes, oh, left switch. And that's why it comes up early. Because what you're actually seeing is the working of the flesh, the working of the spirit underneath to bubble up the possibilities. And then we have that tenth of a second where we move one way or another. I am already home, and I am tired today, but let me go back just real quickly, because the things that he said and what he's trying to get to about love and kindness and how that if we recognize that there's no free will and people have just been unlucky, all those things, if you just twist those a little bit and just say, look, if we recognize that all of us have these other motivators within us, that all of us have this instinct to destroy and to be destroyed in us, then that does make you more loving and compassionate to others. And if you look at someone who has, I need to turn the garage light back on, so I'm just going to open the garage door for a moment. If you look at someone who's on death row, who has had a horrific background and upbringing and never had love and never had compassion, and just was in terrible circumstances, well, the flesh feeds on all that stuff. And yes, you can look at them and say, wow, that's really unfortunate that that was the life that you had. And I can understand how you would be in certain circumstances. I think I've gotten back to all the things I thought I said I would get back to. When he was talking about understanding this as the potential to change our moral, our sense of moral good and our notion of a free society. Yeah, it, you know, if you understand the flesh, it has that potential too. And there were several other things that along the line. Basically, what it comes down for me is that if you understand what the flesh is doing, it really is a much better way to look at life when you abandon this idea that every decision that everyone is making is completely of their own volition and accord. And when they're being terrible to other people, they decided and they knew exactly why they were doing that. And I don't believe that at all. And I think that's one of the things that he's kind of rebelling against, that obviously there's more that's pushing people. There's more motivations that are shoving people in certain directions. And once you factor the flesh into that, you don't have to do away with free will. You just reduce it to, yeah, you could have made a different decision, but you only had a tenth of a second, and so you didn't. One of the big things as I talk with buddies and friends and is I just try to get them to slow down. You know, just don't rush blindly forward and react to stuff. Slow down. Take advantage of the gift of free will that you have. Pause. Think. Because I think it's very easy for us not to exercise the free will that we have. But I absolutely believe that it's there. I had a bunch of quotes from a guy who was talking about Stephen Hawking. This is going to go really long if I do this. But they were pretty interesting. Stephen Hawking and some other guy, Muldenow, in 2010, argued that agency and free will are nothing but an illusion. So they said the molecular basis of biology shows that biological processes are governed by the laws of physics and chemistry. Physics, remember that. And therefore are as determined as the orbits of the planet. Recent experiments in neuroscience support the view that it is our physical brain following the known laws of science that determines our action, not some agency outside those laws. So it seems that we are no more than biological machines and that free will is just an illusion. Okay, so that's the first quote. He quotes Sam Harris, same thing. The author of the article goes on to say the hard version of determinism, a perspective that suggests that agency is neither non-existent or illusory, is often associated with a viewpoint known as a clockwork universe. So there was a Laplace who created the foundation by stating that an intelligence knowing all the forces acting in nature at a given instance, as well as all the momentary positions of all things in the universe, would be able to comprehend in one single formula the motions of the largest bodies as well as the lightest atoms of the world, provided that its intellect were sufficiently powerful to subject all data to analysis. To it, nothing would be uncertain. The future as well as the past would be present in its eyes. Which is a kind of an interesting description of God. But moving on. So, there's also Boscovich, who in 1758, who was a contemporary of his. Got to turn my light on again. Sorry. This is going really long. Sorry. Believed that there was a clockwork universe. He says, now if the laws of force were known and the positions, velocities, blah, blah, blah. Okay, never mind. Moving down. He said, then there's people on the other end of the spectrum, most notably the people who are quantum mechanics people. In classic physics, it would have been legitimate to specify exactly both the position and the momentum of a given particle at the same time, but in quantum mechanics, that is forbidden, as is well known by the uncertainty or indeterminacy principle. The position of a particle can be specified exactly, but its momentum can then be completely undermined. And see, this is the big change between classical physics and quantum mechanics. Now, the article goes on to say, interestingly, well acquainted as Hawking certainly is with quantum mechanics, he insists that determinism holds up even in the face of fundamental physical uncertainties. Hawking says, there is still determinism in the quantum theory, but it is on a reduced scale. In the quantum theory, the ability to make exact predictions is just half what it was in the classical Laplace world. Nonetheless, within this restricted sense, it is still possible to claim that there is determinism. So, the writer of the article goes on to say, quite correctly, this is a curious assumption. It is logically coherent. Is it logically coherent to argue that in a universe where we can predict, at best, 50% of potential outcomes, hard determinism still persists? Is Hawking's conviction an expression of dogmatic faith or a dispassionate analysis of objective facts? Wouldn't it be more appropriate for Hawking to concede that there is as much indeterminism in the universe as there is determinism? He said, interestingly, Hawking and Modlano answer this very question in the negative. This is what they said. According to quantum physics, no matter how much information we obtain or how powerful our computing abilities, the outcomes of physical processes cannot be predicted with certainty because they are not determined with certainty. Instead, given the initial state of the system, nature determines its future state through a process that is fundamentally uncertain. In other words, nature does not dictate the outcome of any process or experiment, even in the simplest situations. In other words, there is no determinism. And if there is no determinism, there can't be determinism in free will. It just can't be. Unless you want to say, well, it's kind of like mostly deterministic. He said then, the self-contradictions do not end there. He said only a few sentences later, these two reverse themselves again. Quantum physics might seem to undermine the idea that nature is governed by laws, but that's not the case. Instead, it leads us to accept a new form of determinism. Given the state of a system at any time, the laws of nature determine that the probabilities of various futures and pasts, rather than determining the future and the past with certainty. Okay, so in other words, you can't determine the future. You can't determine the past because we live in a probabilities-driven universe. So what's the problem with free will? But beyond all that, I have another problem with this business of, well, there is no free will. Because if there's no free will and people truly, truly believe that, truly believe that there was no way to make any other choices besides the choices that were being made all around and that you were just moving forward by the hand of fate, really what that reduces all of us to is that we are all just monkeys dancing in front of the organ grinder of fate. And there's really nothing to commend one person over the other. So it doesn't really matter what Sam Harris thinks. It doesn't really matter what Stephen Hawking thinks. It doesn't matter what anybody says if there is no free will. If it's all just deterministic. Because nobody's viewpoint is any better than anybody else's viewpoint because they only have that viewpoint because they happen to stumble along a path. And they're convinced they're right, but that's because they just happen to be stumbling along a path and they have not made any intellectual gains because they just stumbled forward. So they really have nothing that they can say, oh, look, I have this idea. It's a really great idea. I should share it with people. Your idea isn't any better than anybody else's idea. I mean, this whole idea that you're going to gut us as humans of abilities to make decisions, to evaluate, to reach a conclusion that is the best conclusion, if you take free will out of that, there ain't nothing less left besides, as I said, a bunch of monkeys dancing in front of the organ grinder of fate. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.